And thank you, everyone, for coming out today. It's good to see so many people here. My name is Benjamin Knoll. I am a political science professor at Center College in the middle of Kentucky. Our most recent claim to fame is hosting the vice presidential debate in 2012. So if you watch that, I was literally like right outside the building when all that was going on. Yeah, so that was fun. Okay, so this is one of the 90-minute sessions, so we'll try to keep it as, you know, we'll keep it going throughout the thing here. I understand this is being recorded for posterity, as good Mormons do. So feel free to ask questions throughout. It won't get recorded if it's not on the microphone, but what I'll try to do is repeat back into the microphone what the question was. It's not because I didn't hear you. It's because I'm trying to get it. So everyone's listening on their computers a few weeks or months from now. They'll know what the question was, so they'll be able to follow along the presentation. It also means I'm going to try to explain what's on the slides here, because the people listening on audio won't be able to see what's going on up here. That doesn't mean I don't have faith in your ability to read just as I do the things that are on the slide. It's not for your benefit. It's for the benefit of those who are listening. Does that sound good?
Yes.
Okay, so that sounds like a plan. Anything else? No. Okay. So the presentation today is entitled Faith and Doubt in Contemporary American Mormonism, a Quantitative Empirical Perspective. What this means is that I'm going to be showing you a lot of numbers. Okay, quantitative is about statistics and numbers with this. This is what I do in my job as a political science professor. I like public opinion data. I look at public opinion polls and this sort of stuff, and I do all kinds of fun math with them to try to figure out stuff about how politics works and that kind of thing. And so I apply those same skills to look at what do Mormons think about a variety of things using publicly available data sets of American Mormons. So that's what we're talking about here today. I'm going to show you a couple of things with this. And to put this into a perspective, why are we here? What is the topic about? Most of you are probably familiar with these books that have come out in the last couple of years, especially those of us who are here in this room today. So this is now on the agenda, right? The topic of faith and the topic of doubt. I mean, it was around for a while, but lately with the church history essays, Deseret Book going so far as to publish some of these books here, this is something that's becoming mainstream, this discussion of faith and doubt. We've seen some conference addresses on it, and that's a good thing. What's even better is to be able to talk about these things backed with evidence, yes? We all have anecdotal evidence of people we know in our lives who have done a particular thing, or we know, well, people in my ward tend to be about like this, or people in my stake are like this. But what's useful as well is to be able to look at the broader picture, an aggregate snapshot of what do Mormons think about something, and be able to draw some conclusions on that. Do the patterns we find in the aggregate match our experiences at the individual level. So that's what I'm trying to do. I'm a big believer that more evidence is always better than less evidence when we're talking about something that we care about. So this is what I tried to do, is to get some evidence to inform some of these discussions. All right? Okay. Why is it that we don't have very much empirical quantitative research on Mormons in America, or the rest of the world for that matter? There's a very simple reason for that, and it's because there's just not that many Mormons in the United States as a proportion of the wider population. When public opinion pollsters try to get a sense of, well, what's the presidential race look like, or what do Americans think about X, Y, or Z, the best practice is to do a random sample of the entire country so that everyone in the country has an equal chance of being represented in the population. Hopefully, if that's done well, then whatever picture we get of the sample will be pretty close to what it's like in the wider population. There'll always be a little bit of error. That's why they say margin of error with a particular. That's what it's talking about. There's always going to be a slight margin of error, even if the sample is taken very, very, very well. However, when only about one out of every 50 Americans identifies as a Latter-day Saint, that means you got to call a whole lot of people to hit just a couple of Mormons, right? And if you want to get a sample that's big enough to be able to get that margin of error pretty low, you need to call a whole lot of people to get just enough couple of hundred Mormons to be able to say anything even remotely reliable about them. As you can imagine, that costs a lot of money, which is why it's not done very often. Okay, that's why we just don't have that many surveys out there about what Mormons think about anything. But we have a few, and I'm going to show you one of them that's come today. There are some surveys that we're probably familiar with. People on social media oftentimes organize surveys that they share on their social media feeds, and those are fine, those are good, and they tell us good things. But it's also important to know that those aren't representative samples, right? If you're sharing it with your friends and your friends share it with their friends, that gives you a picture of what your friends and your friends' friends think, but it doesn't really give you a good picture of what the aggregate population thinks about something. It's also hard to study because, as we know, the institution does a lot of its own research internally, but that's not publicly shared or available most of the time. So it's reliant upon external firms, polling organizations, or other interested scholars to run their own surveys to try to answer these questions that we're interested in. All right. So there's just not that many out there. But here's one that was done a couple of years ago, and it's a good one. Okay. So in the run-up to the 2012 presidential election, Americans were curious about Mormons. Mitt Romney was running. He was going to be the presidential nominee for the Republican Party. And so the Pew Research Organization, which does a lot of really good polling on American religion and values, opinions, and these sorts of things, they put up the money to fund one of these studies of American Mormons, of that very, very, very small population. Pew Research is a very good, very reliable organization. They combined a random sample of the population with others that they had randomly called in the past who had identified as LDS, called them back, asked if they were interested in taking these surveys. And over the course of about 3 weeks in the fall of 2011, they were able to collect 1,019 set of responses to question about American Mormons. So that's the sample that we're working with here. This is 1,000 self-identified Mormons in the fall of 2011, all of whom over the age of 18 for legal reasons. At the time, it was about two-thirds called in their home on landlines, about a third with a cell phone, which is good to know that, right? Because as we all know, landlines are decreasing, cell phones are increasing, and so best practice is to include large cell phone proportions of the population to make sure you're getting those people as well. Now, here's the key thing with this survey and who we're talking about here. These are people who self-identify as LDS, okay? That's a different group from people that the church defines as LDS, right? The people that the church defines are those who are on the records, even if they haven't been in 30 years or whatever. It's just whoever has gotten baptized and has a record on the church is counted as a member, which includes people who, yes, identify when someone calls them in their house and asks them what their religion is. Many of those people say, yes, I'm a Mormon, but many don't, okay? So the sample that I'm going to show you is not the same group of people that the church has on their records, okay? That's a really important distinction to keep in mind as we're going throughout all this. The sample is people who own up to it when asked on the telephone, okay? Or the people who choose to say it. Now, we don't know if they're lying or not. Maybe they're, you know, something else, and they just choose for funsies to say they're Mormons. Probably a very small section of these, if any. But that's who we're relying on, okay? The people who say, yes, I'm a Mormon, when called by a telephone survey company and asked what their religion is, okay? Now, what was interesting in this survey, they took anyone who said that they were a Mormon of any kind, including other, like the Community of Christ and such, but out of these 1,012, as it says on here, only one person, when asked a follow-up question, identified as a member of the Community of Christ. Four just said something else. I'm not LDS. I'm not Community of Christ. I'm something else here. One person said, I'm just a Mormon. One person said, I don't know which of those. But all the rest of them, so the vast majority of these said, yes, LDS Mormon. That's who I'm talking about. So for all intents and purposes, our sample here is self-identified Latter-day Saint Mormons with this. Okay. Also, there was a question asking them about their activity level. They asked, are you very active, somewhat active, not very active, or not at all active? Amongst the people that they randomly selected from the population here, 85% of them said that they were either active or somewhat active. Okay, so that means that the sample we're working with here is the people who not only own up to a Mormon identification, but would say, yeah, and I'm pretty involved in it too. That means that there's not a lot of people in this sample who we would say are not very active or don't go very often or something like that, which is interesting because we know from other evidence that roughly a third to 40% of American Mormons, of members of record, are actually active. But of the ones who say they're Mormon, the vast majority of them say that they're active too. And doing the math, what does that mean? Most of the people who aren't very active then don't self-identify as Mormon, at least to telephone surveyors. That's what those numbers imply for us. So that's an interesting piece of evidence number one, just in terms of how the church membership of record matches up with self-identification from public opinion surveys. All right. Okay. Also, just for your information, I have the URL here. If you want to see the survey yourself, it's up on the internet. It's on Pew's website. You can download the data set for yourself. That's what I did. It's got an executive summary of a lot of cool information about it. Feel free. If you think this is interesting, it's there. Also, I should say this set of slides that I'm putting on here will be available next week on the Rational Face website. I'm also in my spare time a permablogger with the Rational Face website. And so next week I'll be putting this up and you can download it and look at all this if you don't want to scribble down or not anyways. But it'll be available to you if you want to go download it. It'll be available there. Okay, so far so good? Any questions so far? All right, we'll keep going. So what I wanted to know, sorry, before we get to that, one more small thing. This is in 2011, okay? Nearly 5 years have gone by. So what we're showing you is a snapshot of what it was in 2011. This is before the church history essays came out. This is before these books I showed you just a few minutes ago have come out. So the landscape has probably changed somewhat in the last couple of years. I don't know of any other more recent publicly available public opinion data set of Mormons in America that has the same set of questions that exists to date. So as far as I know, this is the best we got to work with for these questions that we're interested in. So just keep that in mind, too. Things might have shifted a bit in the last couple of years. Okay, so one of the questions that often comes up in discussions of faith and doubt in Mormonism is, well, how many people is this really? How many people are there that have these questions about Mormonism, who said that they're not exactly sure about everything? And that's a really tricky thing to try to get at. This survey had this question given to the people who answered this survey here. The pollsters asked them, which of these statements comes closer to your own views, even if neither is exactly right? Some teachings of the LDS Church are hard for me to believe, or I believe wholeheartedly in all the teachings of the LDS Church. And they were asked to give one of those two answers. This is an okay question, but it's not a great question. Okay? We can see real quick how this loses a lot of nuance to it, right? Because someone could say, yeah, I'm 100% on board with everything except for Kolob. And I say, yeah, some of those things are hard for me to believe. Or you could be someone who says, I go to church, I enjoy it, but I'm really just a social Mormon. I have doubts about the historicity of the Book of Mormon or the divinity of Jesus, et cetera, et cetera. That person could also say, some teachings of the LDS Church are hard for me to believe. So that's a very diverse group right in there, okay? So for the purposes of this presentation and this presentation alone, for the sake of simplicity, I'm going to say the believers versus the doubters. Knowing that, that's a very, very blunt and probably wildly inaccurate in many cases label to put on these two groups. But that's the question that was done, and so that's what we have to work with. Okay? All righty. So first thing we want to know, how many of the people were in each of these two categories? Any guesses off the top of your head? How many do you think said wholeheartedly? I hear 50-50? I hear 85? I hear 60-40? Something like that? Okay. I'll show you. Are we excited about this? Yeah. Show me! Okay. All right. At first pass, this is what we have here, okay? 75.4% says, I believe wholeheartedly in all the teachings of the LDS Church. In the fall of 2011, among self-identified Mormons, most of whom are fairly active. 22.6% say some teachings are hard for me to believe. Now, again, we don't know which of those teachings are hard for them to believe. We just know that's what they say when they answer the question. All right? So it looks at first pass like a three quarters, one quarter split between these two groups. Now, there's something else to keep in mind in terms of interpreting this particular question here. Okay? We assume that the answer that they give us is an accurate description of their thoughts, preferences, and beliefs, right? That's just something you do with public opinion surveys because you don't have a lie detector to test on the other end of the phone. You just trust that whatever anyone says is what they actually think about the topic. So this is what they said. There is reason to think that that might be different, right? Because for active Mormons who identify as such, talking to someone on the other end of the phone who you don't know if it's a member of the church or not or whatever, and for many of these people who are raised in an environment when they're socially programmed to defend a religion, right? there's probably a lot of pressure to say, yeah, I believe wholeheartedly, because you don't want to represent your religion poorly to this public opinion surveyor who you've never met before, you don't know if, you know, whatever. So it's possible that there's even more people in the some teachings are hard for me to believe than the other category, but we don't have any way from the survey to measure that. Okay? So this is the best we got. This is the most accurate, but keep this in mind. Nonetheless, this is not a small, minuscule number, right? This is a chunk. This is a sizable amount. Okay, so the first question I wanted to know with this, well, who are these individuals? Who are the people who say some teachings are hard for me to believe? So the first thing I did is just went through and looked at the various demographic patterns. I looked at gender, age, partisanship, other, just anything that was available in the survey, just to see in this group how many people say this, in this group how many people say this, just to see at a first pass. So I can take you through a couple of these things right now. All right? Okay. First one. Among a sample of people, most of whom are active, okay? So most of the people in the survey are in this group here. All right? 15% of the survey is in this group. Among those individuals, we see there's a clear pattern here. We see a trend, okay? So what this is saying is, just among people who say that they're very active, and again, this isn't an objective measure of this. It's not how many times did you go to church this last week, et cetera, et cetera. It's just asking you, do you consider yourself to be very active or not? Among the people who said, yes, I consider myself to be very active, 8.5% of them also said, and some things that the LDS Church teaches are hard for me to believe. Among those who self-identify as Mormon but say, yeah, I'm not at all active, 89% just about say some things in church are hard for me to believe. So we see a clear, clear pattern with this. Belief versus doubt is strongly related to self-reported level of activity. Okay. Shocker, right? As we would expect. Okay. Second thing, I looked at gender. Male versus female. No real difference on this one. Which I thought was interesting. 23% of males versus 22% of females say some teachings are hard for me to believe here, which suggests it's not really a male versus female thing in terms of faith versus doubt, just based on this first pass here. There's about equal numbers in each group. Okay, how about age? Take a look at this here. Among those who are in the millennial generation, about 17% said some things in the church are hard for me to believe, whereas those over age 65... about 11% more, 28% said some things that the church teaches are hard for me to believe. Does this surprise anyone else? Yes, this surprised me too. Okay, now this is the number that we have. This is what we've got. So quantitative analysis does a good job of telling us what, but it doesn't do a great job of telling us why. So we have to rely on just other things we know. We have to figure out a hypothesis to try to explain. So what explains what we see here with this? Any takers? Yes?
They are less likely to identify as Mormon.
Okay, this is a good one. Yes?
They've seen more change policy. Mm-hmm. Therefore, gives them a basis to question.
Okay, you mean the older American. Yes, okay. I like this, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Let's take one more. Yes.
Could it have to do with missionaries and that puts like a zeal into their
Yes, that could be. So a lot of these are likely include return missionaries here. Yes, good. Audio listeners, I apologize. I forgot to repeat the various comments here. So there were some good ones. I'll try to do better at that from the get-go. So a lot of what you all are saying is my supposition. I don't know for sure because we don't have any hard evidence of it, but that's my guess is largely what you were saying. For younger people, many of whom are just leaving institutionalized religion at rates we haven't seen in several generations, the ones who have questions just drop off and don't identify as LDS anymore. Whereas for older individuals who've already lived their life in the church, they've got more socially invested in it, and they're probably, if they've been there that long, they're probably not going anywhere. That's my guess. The stereotype, right, is younger people have more doubts than older people. at least among the people who currently identify as LDS and go to church regularly, actually, more older people than younger people express doubts. But again, that's because I think the younger people who have the doubts have already left or are on their way out, if that makes sense. So I don't think, in reality, younger people have fewer doubts than older people. I just think because of who is defined as a Mormon in this sample, these are the results we get. Yes?
It could mean that older people are a lot smarter than millennials.
The comment there was, it could be that older are a lot smarter than millennials. That we could test. We would have to do a follow-up study on that. Thank you. Okay, so this to me was defy stereotype number one, okay? Education, is this another one? We have a idea that it's popularly said, you know, people of certain education groups tend to have questions or doubts at certain rates. This is what we find in the survey. Interesting. About a third of people who say that they have a high school education or less report that some things are hard for them to believe, but only 13 and 15% respectively of college and postgraduate educated individuals say that some things are hard for them to believe. Again, the opposite of what the stereotype is, right? But again, my guess, and I don't know, you know, but my guess is the same thing's going on with the younger group, right? The more educated people who have questions sometimes have the social resources to be able to up and take off or do something else and perhaps no longer identify as LDS, whereas less educated people may not be doing that. But I don't know. But that would explain the patterns that we see in here. Or it could just be that our stereotype is inaccurate. Maybe it's just simply the case that less educated people have more doubts. At least these are the numbers that we have here. So trying to explain this, this is the interesting thing, I think. This one so far? Yeah, okay.
Some of that postgraduate is going to be professional degrees versus academic.
Absolutely,
degrees.
Yeah.
And so it's a lot less challenging.
That's right. So postgraduate could include law school, it could include MBA, it could engineers, physicians, et cetera, et cetera. It's not just PhDs with...
Especially humanities.
Yes, indeed. Especially, yes. Okay. Race, ethnicity. Take a look at this one. Not a huge difference, but a small difference, okay? Amongst those who self-identify as white, 22% report some things are hard for me to believe. 27.5% of non-whites, so this includes blacks, Hispanics, et cetera, everyone else, just non-white, reports that some things are hard to me believe, for me to believe. Still not a huge difference, but it's there. It's small. Okay, how about marital status? And again, I was just throwing everything in here, trying to find every variable that might have some sort of pattern. I hear some chuckles already on this one. Okay, so for those listening, we see that amongst those who are married, widowed, or never been married, roughly 20 to 25% of them say some things are hard. Amongst those who are currently divorced, 40%, 38.8%, say some things are hard for me to believe. And nearly 80% of those who are not married but living with a partner say some things are hard for me to believe. This doesn't surprise me terribly. It makes sense that people who are living in situations that the church either tacitly or explicitly disapproves of would say, and I'm less likely to believe some things that the church teaches. That would be my explanation of this, but perhaps there are others. Okay. How about income? Income. Not a huge difference on this one, actually. Those making less than $30,000 a year, about a quarter of them, 23%, say some things are hard to believe, compared to only 26% of those making over $100,000 a year, with more or less the same in between. So roughly a quarter of everyone. This leads me to think that at least at this pass of the data, income isn't strongly associated with faith and doubt. Although, quick preview of things to come, I'll show you that there might be a relationship, but that's to come. Okay. Any guesses for partisanship? Yeah, okay. Want to take a look at this one? Whoa! Sometimes their stereotypes are confirmed, sometimes they're not. In this case, I would think it's confirmed. Yes. The interesting thing for me, though, is that people who self-identify as Democrats say they have less doubt than people who identify as independent or independent and lean Democrat. I've thought about this for a couple of weeks now. I don't have an immediate explanation for this. It is interesting, though. That's something I'm continuing to think about. But as we would expect, people who self-identify as Republican or Republican-leaning independents, 14-19% of those report as doubters. Pure independents, 39%. Independents who lean Democrat, 67%. And Democrats, 33%.
Wouldn't people who self-identify as independent consider themselves more skeptical of things?
That could be. That could be part of this. Yeah. People who are... So other political science research has shown that people who self-identify as independent are also less likely to join up with other things, including religion, civic clubs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They're just not joiners as much as the people who do self-identify, so that could very well be part of it here. Yes? Not necessarily. So that's what we would think, right? With these surveys, what we find, and I wish I had the breakdown exactly. I don't have that readily available. But there's more people in the independent lean categories on both than there are in the pure independent category in this. Political science research shows most people love to say they're independent, but when it gets down to it, they're really not independent, most of them. Most of them, when you ask if they lean one way or the other, vote the same way that they lean, and they are identical in every way, pretty much, to the ones who identify right from the get-go. So the pure independence group is actually a much smaller, it's 10% or less of the voter population in America. So there's that. Yes?
Another thing that might matter is, in the original statistics, you said it was one-third Utah, two-thirds not Utah.
Mm-hmm.
And as a non-Utah Mormon Democrat, I didn't feel weird until I came to Utah.
That makes sense.
It's much easier to be a Democrat and be a Mormon if you're outside of Utah.
That makes sense. Yeah, so the comment there is... perhaps that has something to do with being inside versus outside of Utah and the relationship there. Yeah, that very well could be the case. Thank you. Yes?
In your sample size, would you guess that those that identify as independent but leaning one way or the other tend to be the more, radical or more progressive or something? Like, because they don't want to identify initially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that could be the case too. So the question with that is, are the independents who lean toward a party more extreme in their ideas, et cetera, than those who identify? That's possible amongst Mormons specifically. I don't know the specific breakdown. In the nation at large, at least, those who claim the party and those who lean are not identical, but similar, very similar. The independents who lean are slightly less extreme than the partisans from the get-go. But that might be different for Mormons. We'd have to go back and take a look at that data more. Another project to do. Yes, I like that. Okay. I also have political ideology, which is very similar to partisanship, but not exactly the same thing. It shows us pretty much the exact same pattern as we see here. Those who identify as liberal, about half of them report being a doubter. Those who identify as conservative, about 16%. Very liberal, 30%, very conservative, 16%, with those moderate, about 33%. So about the same thing as we saw before. Utah versus non-Utah. We have that one too. Okay. All right, so I've separated this out into three different categories. We've got Utah, other Western, so this is Idaho, Nevada, Wyoming, Colorado, California, Arizona, New Mexico, so the other predominantly Western Mormon states that aren't Utah, and then just everything else in the country. There are some differences here. They're not huge. People who live in Utah, about 19% of them say that some things are hard for me to believe, compared to about 24% of other Western, and virtually identical with all other states. This isn't a huge difference, but it does suggest people in Utah are slightly different from people outside of Utah. But again, this difference is not near as big as some of the other differences that we've seen. So it seems to matter, just not that much. How about converts versus non-converts? Okay, a little more of a sizable difference here. About a third of converts say that some things are hard for me to believe, compared to about 20% of non-converts. How about those who have served a mission versus those who haven't? Ooh. Any guesses on this one? Okay, So those who have served a mission, only 7% say some things in the church are hard for me to believe. Whereas about a quarter of those who haven't served a mission say some things in the church are hard for me to believe. Yes?
Remind us, please, what was the overall percentage of people who said something hard for me to believe?
That was 22-ish, 23%, about a quarter.
So it's much closer to no mission. So this implies to me that most people haven't served a mission.
Yeah, in the sample, it was about, if I remember, about 35 to 40% of the sample said that they were return missionaries. Yeah. Yep, that's good. Indeed, right. So that is what this is showing here, absolutely. Okay, we've got, how about being a temple recommend holder versus non-temple recommend holder? This is what I like about the survey. It actually asked this. How many public opinion surveys are asking people, like, by the way, do you have a Mormon temple recommend? Not that many. Okay. About 11% of current temple recommend holders say that some things are hard to believe, versus nearly half, 46.3% of non-temple recommend holders. That could be part of it. Yes. If I remember, so the question was asked, do you have one right now? I don't think it asked, have you had one in the past? They could be. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, the question with that one is there a distinction between those who had one in the past versus no longer do? I have to double check on that. I think I remember it being current. I could be wrong on that, but I can go back and double check on that. So I put my email up at the beginning. Feel free to like send me a question. I'd be happy to take a look at it and get back to you. Okay. That's interesting. How about self-report church attendance? That's similar to the activity, but it's different. It's how much do you go to church? Again, no big surprise here. 13% of those who go once a week say I have questions, versus those who go seldom or never, 82% about say that they've got questions here. One more. Self-reported frequency of prayer. Those who pray once a day or more, 17% say that they've got some doubts, whereas those who pray seldom or never, 67% say they have doubts of some kind. Again, what people tell to people on a telephone survey is not always exactly the same thing of what they actually do. You get where I'm going with this? So, for example, in my line of work, you do a public opinion survey. Roughly 80% of the public says that they vote every presidential election. If only, right? So there's a fifth of the country, more or less, who says they do when they really don't. I'm guessing it's probably the same with like church attendance and prayer and that kind of stuff. Who wants to say they never pray? You know, well, some people are fine saying that, but a lot of people, there's still some pressure to present themselves in a socially desirable way, as I say this. Okay, so this is interesting. That's the basic demographic and religious behavior patterns that we see in this. I think that's all kinds of interesting here. One of the things that I thought was most interesting is we look at, for example, the temple recommend one, 10% versus 46% say some things are hard for me to believe. But what's interesting, I think, is that amongst those even who are temple recommend holders, that even one out of every 10 would say some things are hard for me to believe, that's a non-trivial number. I mean, that's a chunk of people in the LDS Church currently holding a temple recommend, therefore presumably also adhering to the variety of behavioral and theological standards that are required for it, say, yeah, and some things are tough for me. So that's interesting to know, I think. Okay, now the next thing I did with this, for funsies, is what's called a multivariate statistical analysis. And what that is we know all these various things are probably related to each other. People who are older, for instance, tend also to be more Republican in the United States, tend to be better educated just because they're older, so they've had more years to get an education, tend to make more money because they've had longer careers, so they're able to be higher in their companies or whatever. So one thing we want to know is, even after controlling for all the rest of these factors, is there any independent effect of any one of these on whether or not someone says that some things are hard for me to believe versus not? That's what a multivariable analysis can do, is it can look at them all at the same time and see, once you account for all of them, which of these factors are actually unique and independent, taking into account all the other ones. All right. So once we did that, I took all the same variables that I just showed you, put it into this model, and this is what we see. I didn't put the numbers up here because they're boring. So just to put the actual results up. So what matters? Income, partisanship, whether someone's a convert, frequency of church attendance, whether they served a mission, or and frequency of prayer. Those things affected. They're associated, even after controlling for the other variables, with the likelihood of expressing doubts. On the other hand, one's marriage status, gender, age, race, ethnicity, income, political ideology, whether they're from Utah or not, or a current technical recommend holder, interestingly enough, isn't associated with these things. Hmm. Okay. So, yes? Oh, I do. I'm sorry. That was my bad. It should be on what matters. That's what I get for not doing the third proofread. Yeah, sorry. Income should be on what matters only, as I will show you in just a second. Okay, now take a look at this. This is cool. All right, this chart, what this is showing is the independent effect of income on the likelihood of the person saying that they have questions about the teachings of the LDS Church, controlling for all the other factors at the same time. Okay, now take a look over on the y-axis. There's the numbers there. 0.1 means 10%, 0.2 is 20%, et cetera, et cetera. Interpret it this way. For people who make $30,000 or less, they're about 15% likely to say some things in the church are hard for me to believe versus I believe wholeheartedly in all the teachings of the church. Compared to someone who makes $100,000 or more is about 40% likely to do so. That's what this chart is showing us here. Okay. The lines above and below each of the dots, these are those margin of error confidence intervals. Okay. So what this is saying is that because this is only looking at 1,000 Mormons in our sample and not however many self-identified Mormons there are in the wider population, we're about 95% confident that in the true wider population, the effect of $30,000 or less is somewhere between 10 and 20% likely to say this. That's what that means. Okay, so we're pretty sure it's within that interval there. And the key thing that we see is it goes up over time here. So roughly a 30, 35% increase from not making very much money to making more than $100,000 a year. I looked at this and I thought, hey, look at that. The pride cycle confirmed. Yes?
Can that be separated from education?
This is separated from education, yes. So this is in the model taking every other one of those variables into account and taking out the combined effect of both of those things. So this is only income in isolation. Yes, yes, yes. You mean like receiving fast offering assistance funds? No, that wasn't in the survey. So I don't have any independent measure of whether or not they're receiving money from the church or not. That would be interesting, though. Yeah, but that wasn't asked in there. Okay, so this is income. Partisanship, I'll show you this one because this one mattered. So the similar type of thing that we saw before going on, 1, 2, 3, 4 corresponds to strong Republican, independent lean Republican, independent lean Democrat, and strong Democrat with this one. Once again, basically the same pattern. Strong Republicans, about 18%-ish likely to express doubt. Independent lean Democrat, about 45%. And the strong Democrats, about 23%. Now, this is interesting. If you were to just only compare Republicans and Democrats, they look pretty much the same, interestingly enough. But once you account for those independents who lean one way, so it seems like most of the questions about this are coming with the self-identified independents group, which is interesting for those interested in the religion and politics relationship. Yes?
Just imagining maybe it's people who like to accept an orthodoxy of any kind.
Yeah, that's a possibility. It could be just people who just don't like following a program of any kind, whether political or religious. Yeah, that could be the case, indeed. Okay, so that one's partisanship. Let's see, converts, that one mattered. So being a convert is about 32% likely to express a doubt versus about 20% likely if you're a non-convert. So in English, this is basically converts are roughly 12 to 13% more likely to express doubts than non-converts. That's how we can put this into layman's terms with this. Yes?
In terms of the overall, but They're twice as likely.
Is another
way to say it.
Because it'd be 20.
Well,
it's not quite. It's an increase of about 50%. But yeah, it matters. It goes up by a chunk there. Yeah.
You mean 100%, not
50%. Something in 20 to 40% would be a 100% increase. So 20 to 30%.
28, you said?
No, sorry. It's about 20 to 32%-ish. That's the difference here. Yeah. Sorry, yeah, it's the y-axis is different for each of these because of different scale. Okay, let me show you church attendance. Okay, now what's interesting about this one here is that church attendance, at least self-reported church attendance, doesn't really start to affect your likelihood of expressing doubts until you're at the seldom, never category. Even people who go a few times a year are still only about 10% more likely, 10 to 15%, than those who say they go more than once a week, showing up on Wednesday nights too, to express doubts. Right, exactly. So yeah, it's where the difference comes in is between that a few times a year to like seldom, like maybe once in a while kind of a thing. So that's interesting. Having gone on a mission, this is the difference for this one here. So we've got people who have not gone on a mission, roughly 24.5% likely to express doubts, compared to roughly about 17%. So it doesn't change it a lot. And we can see because of the confidence intervals, the margin of error, even overlap. So that means we can't even be sure that there is a real difference between these two. Because it might be as low as the lowest one there and as high as the highest one there. It does show a difference, but we're not sure that it can actually be one. So what this means to me is that serving a mission matters, but it matters just a little bit, it seems, once you account for all these other factors in here. Now, this one's interesting to me. Self-reported frequency of prayer. This one goes in a U-shape kind of fashion. Those who say they pray several times a day, and those who say that they never pray are about equally likely to say that they have questions as not. Whereas those who pray kind of in the middle, once or twice a week, tend to be the most likely to express doubts on here. About 70%-ish likely to express that there. Again, I don't have an apparent ready explanation for that one. That one's still a head-scratcher to me. But nonetheless, this is what we see here. That could be it. Perhaps we don't need to pray, right? Because we've already got, yes, the confident answers there. Good. Good, good, good. Okay, so then, based on that, what I did was took each of these variables, and I tried to find who would be the most likely person out of everyone in this survey who is the 100% doubter and who's the 100% no questions TBM Mormon. Okay, what do they look like? And this is based on these variables, this is what we have. Okay, so if you want to find someone who says they have questions, find someone who's a wealthy, democratic-leaning independent convert to the church who's no longer active and didn't go on a mission and prays about once a week. Chances are there's a 97% likelihood that there'll be someone who says, some things in church are hard for me to believe. Whereas, find a poorer Republican who was born in the church, who was very active in a return missionary, and prays more than once a day, and you're 99% confident that that person's going to say, I believe wholeheartedly in all the teachings of the LDS Church. So consider these, excuse me, two ends of a spectrum, okay, with everyone else in between. Cool, huh? Yes. You may. Oh, absolutely, yes. So the spectrum being those who are in the survey, yeah.
And I say that because the left side has just enough things in it still
mm-hmm.
to let somebody self-identify as Mormon.
It's true, yeah.
Whereas those who are in the doubters and not self-identifying as Mormon would probably cross off a couple of things.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah, absolutely. And again, that's one of the limitations of this particular data set. This is at least amongst the people who say, I'm a Mormon. These are the ends of the spectrum of having questions versus not. broaden that out, just like you said, and absolutely, we probably find that some of these variables either wouldn't matter anymore, or they might matter more, or there might be other things that come into the mix. Yes? Oh, you're fine, you're fine. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Like, did their doubting, like, affect whether or not they said prayers every day?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do you know what I'm saying?
Yes. So you're asking about the causal direction, which way do the arrows go between these things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is no, the survey didn't have anything to that effect, which is also one of the limitations of public opinion surveys. It shows relationships at one snapshot in time, but it's not very good at teasing out temporal cause and effect, how things affect each other over time. Some of the more sophisticated ones do a better job at that, but this one's just one slice in the fall of 2011. This is where people were at, and this is what they were doing here. And yeah, it's a good question. Are people not going to church because they have questions, or do they have questions because they're not going to church, right? Yeah, and that's one of the things that comes up a lot in church discourse, right? And, what's causing the doubt? What comes first? You know, that kind of thing. Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. I don't know a dollar amount. That's a good question. It would probably be in the five figures at least, probably high five figures, but that's an off of the top of my head guess based on other things that I've tried to do and not had enough money to do. it wouldn't be cheap to do that. Okay, so that was, one more question. Yes. The question is, does it show for the converts what church they came from? I think yes is the question, but I don't have that data here with me. I think it does show of those who converted, what church did you convert from? But I don't have that here. But send me an email. I can look that up. That's a good question. I think you're here. Okay. Okay. Yes. One more. I don't believe so. Not in this survey. I would imagine as time goes on that'll be increasingly a more common question to include in public opinion surveys. Okay, so that was the first question I want to ask. Who are the people who say, I have questions? The second question is, now of the people who say they have questions, what are they like in other aspects of their life, whether the church or non-church? So that's what we're going to jump to now. All right, we ready for this one? Okay, we're about halfway through. We're still good? Need a water break? Okay, we'll just keep going. Okay, one of the questions was, agree, disagree, overall, I'm satisfied with the way things are going in my life. How do doubters and believers compare? They're almost exactly the same. About 86% of self-identified Mormons who say some things are hard to believe say, yeah, I'm satisfied with the way things are going in my life. 88%-ish, it's roughly exactly the same. Of those who say, I believe wholeheartedly, say the same thing. So this is interesting to me because this defies also somewhat of the popular conceptions about maybe when people have questions, their life doesn't go as well or there's some other things going on. This seems to show, no, people, at least they say, at least, that they're about as happy having questions as not. So that's interesting. Okay, this one's a little bit more complicated. This asks people, what are some of the most important things in your life? Having lots of free time to relax, being a good parent, living a religious life, having a successful marriage, being successful in a high-paying career or profession. And it shows the red bars are the ones who said, I believe wholeheartedly. Blue bars are the ones, some things are hard for me to believe. So it's just showing, among those various life priorities, how do doubters and believers compare in their life priorities? We can see a few things right off the bat. Among both groups, having lots of free time to relax and being successful in a career tends to not be a high priority, at least as far as they're willing to say on a telephone survey. Being a good parent is fairly high for both groups. The big difference is living a religious life. Amongst believers, about 2/3 of them say that's a high priority for me. Amongst doubters, roughly 1/4 say that's important for me. So that's interesting. Also, having a successful marriage, there's a bit more of a difference on that one. About 78% of believers say that's important, and about 58% of doubters say that's important. Yes?
When you were showing us the breakdown before, uh-huh. Marriage status, weren't divorce members more likely to have doubt?
Yes. There could very well, yeah, be a relationship there, yeah, with that. So the question with there is that we see that people who are divorced are more likely to have doubts, and we also see that doubters are less likely to say having a successful marriage. So that makes sense, yeah, the conjunction of these two things.
People just have to pick one, or how
does... No, it's just each one of them, is it very important to, yeah, so it says, is this very important, somewhat important, not very important? These are the percentage of people who say this is one of the most important things. So... being successful in a career, lots of people said this is somewhat important or very, but this is identifying one of the most important things for me. So I was just taking that as the bottom line life priorities with this question. Okay, let's move on to look about, okay, this is interesting. Which of the following things are moral issues? So they're given a list of statements, and they're asked, to you, is this, I think it was, is this morally acceptable, morally unacceptable, or is this not a moral issue at all? Okay. First one, having an abortion. So we see amongst this one, most everyone, doubters and non-doubters alike, say it's morally unacceptable, but there is a 30% difference still. Nearly more than 9 out of 10 of believers say it's morally unacceptable. Only about 2/3 of doubters say it's morally unacceptable, while still a majority of both groups saying it's unacceptable. So that one's interesting. Divorce. Not a huge difference on this one. More doubters, about 1/3 of doubters say it's morally unacceptable, whereas about 11% about 1/3 of believers say it's morally unacceptable compared to about 10% of doubters. The interesting thing for me is it's about a majority of both almost say it's not a moral issue one way or the other, which is interesting compared to previous generations. So that's noteworthy. Polygamy. Yes. Not a huge difference whether you're a doubter or believer, interestingly enough. 83% of doubters, 89% of believers say, yeah, that's not okay. Morally unacceptable. But interestingly... 10 to 13, so about 10% of both groups say it's not a moral issue, and only 4% of doubters say it's okay. 1% of believers say it's okay. So this is interesting. More doubters say that polygamy is okay than believers, but even then, it's very, very, very small for both groups. Sex between unmarried adults. Again, a majority of both groups say morally unacceptable, but it's a big difference on this one. 89% of believers say that's morally unacceptable compared to 51% of doubters. Nearly a 40% difference between these two. So that one we see a clear difference in terms of moral reasoning and ethics. Drinking alcohol, okay? For the whole word of wisdom thing here. Okay, we see bigger difference on this one. Believers, 2/3 say it's morally unacceptable compared to only... 1/4 of doubters say that drinking alcohol is morally unacceptable. A majority of doubters say it's not a moral issue, 60%, whereas about 1/3 of believers say it's not a moral issue. Okay, now this one's cool too, and I think this is actually a really key chart with this whole thing here. The survey then asks about a variety of religious beliefs. Yes or no? I believe that, and then they would state a number of things. These are the people who say, yes, I believe with these various statements. Separated out amongst believers and doubters for each of these here. Okay? So first, I believe that reincarnation is real. A minority of both groups. 8% of believers say, yes, I believe that. About 1/4 of doubters say, yes, I believe that. Yoga is a spiritual practice. 30 to 45% on that one. Okay, we see a difference on only men should have the priesthood here. The interesting thing, in this survey at least, is a majority of both groups say, yes, I believe that. 2/3 of doubters are saying some things in the church are hard for me to believe, say, yes, I believe only men should have the priesthood, compared to 96% of people who say wholeheartedly, I agree with all the things the church teaches.
For gender,
Yes.
Specified in that part in any of these questions?
Yeah, it did ask a follow. So yes, gender is one of the questions here. I don't have this specific question broken out further amongst male versus female, doubters versus believers. That would be an interesting thing to look at. I don't know that off the top of my head. But yeah, it does have that information. We could go take a look at it. Okay. Now, the next several ones here, this is what's really fascinating to me. Take a look at questions like families can be eternally sealed in temples. The current LDS president is a prophet of God. The Book of Mormon was written by ancient prophets. God and Jesus are physically separate. Jesus rose from the dead. Both doubters and believers alike, strong majorities believe in all of these things. More so for the believers, right? We do see that believers are more likely, anywhere from 94 to 99% say yes to those things. For doubters, it's closer to 77% to still 98% on some of these things here. Believers and doubters alike are both full on yes, God and Jesus are physically separate. Vast majority say yes, Jesus rose from the dead. The vast majority still believe that families can be sealed in temples, even amongst people who have questions. Book of Mormon written by ancient prophets, a little bit wider difference, but still, three-quarters of people with questions say, yes, the Book of Mormon is written by ancient prophets. It's a historical, literal document here. This suggests to me that then the people who have questions about stuff, who say some things are hard for me to believe, they're not doubting the core things. Most of them aren't doubting Jesus rose from the dead. They're not doubting the historicity of the Book of Mormon, the reality of the priesthood, sealing ordinances, etc. That's something else for most of them that they're doubting. We don't know what, because the survey didn't ask follow-up questions on these, but this is interesting here. Yes?
Given the similarity of the numbers, and being that they're not disagreeing with other things, but the doubters tend to focus on, there are some, none of these numbers are 100%.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. So could the doubters simply be focusing on what they don't agree, and the PBMs, as you're calling them, are focusing that, well, by and large, on there, that there's actually not a fundamental disagreement, it's just their perception of their correspondence to the church of speech?
Mm-hmm. That's a possibility. We'd have to go in and dig a little bit deeper to look into that. But yeah, it's possible that the difference there can be explained by the gap we see between the believers and non-believers on this. Yes?
So two questions. You come back to the whole first vision of Moroni. That's what makes you Mormon. Even if you say they have doubts, if it's still a bit Mormon, that's the thing that makes you different.
Mm-hmm. No, that's good. Yeah, so the comment with that is a lot of these are about the core fundamental beliefs of Mormonism. Even if you have questions, if you're not believing in these things, this suggests that most people then don't identify any longer as Mormon then, at least when the people call up and ask them on the telephone, even if they still are on the church records or anything else. So it seems that the people who identify, most of whom are active, even if they have questions, are still largely on board with the fundamentals. Yes? There's one community of Christ of the 1,000 people in here that's included in this.
So that's probably the 0.3%.
That could be. Yeah, so it's virtually none. No, this is largely purely LDS Mormon in this survey here.
Because when you say Mormon, that includes...
It does. It does indeed. And yeah, among those, there were just very, very few of them, like just a handful. Less than, so statistically, it doesn't make a difference.
Count, but less than 90.
It could be. Yeah, it could be that one or two people. Yeah, exactly. Indeed, yeah, that could be the case. That could be the case. Yes?
For the reincarnation, do you mean like Eastern reincarnation? Do we mean like you come back?
The survey didn't specify. It just asked, do you believe in reincarnation?
Like,
do you believe it's real?
That, like, if I believe wholeheartedly, but 1 in 10 of these people think reincarnation is real.
You don't think Jesus rose from the
dead?
Right. The idea that your spirit comes back into another physical body. Yeah, I mean, Orthodox Mormonism does not believe in reincarnation, yet we see almost 1 out of every 10.
They don't know what it really means.
That could be. They might not know. Yeah, that's another possibility as well. That could be. Yeah, no, that's another possibility, right? We just don't know. We assume that they, and they try to word these questions in a way that most everyone will be able to do a good job answering them, but sometimes it's not done perfect. Yes? That could be, yeah. It's true, yeah. So the way that the question is worded oftentimes can affect the results that are shown. That's true. And again, it was just worded the way it is, so I don't know for sure. They'd have to go back and retest it with different wording to see. But yeah, that's a possibility. Okay, let me show you just a couple of other things here. Then there was a series of questions about what do you think is essential for being a good Mormon? It's not just being Mormon, but a good Mormon. And it gave a variety of things. Do you think this thing is essential for being a good Mormon? Yes or no, etc. All right. Not watching R-rated movies. Okay. As we would expect, there's a difference. Believers are more likely to say, yeah, that's essential for being a good Mormon than doubters. But what's interesting to me is it's a minority of both groups.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. Only a little over a third of people who say, I believe wholeheartedly, say that, nah, that's not, that's, or say that, yes, that's essential. So most, even full core, you know, people who don't have questions say that that's not essential. Having regular family home evening, there's a difference on this one. It's roughly half. We have 57% of believers say, yeah, that's essential. A little less than a third for doubters. Helping the poor and the needy. I like this question here. And it's strong majorities on both of them. 77% of believers, 62% of doubters say helping the poor and the needy is essential to being a good Mormon. Word of wisdom, observance, as we would expect, is different on this one. 60% of believers say, yes, that's essential for being a good Mormon. But again, that suggests that 40% of believers say not drinking coffee or tea isn't a big deal for being a good Mormon. That's the more interesting interpretation of this evidence here.
Is that including the temple recommend vote?
It is. It is indeed. Yeah. Indeed it is. Indeed it is. Okay. And how about this last one? To be a good Mormon, should someone have to believe that Joseph Smith saw God and Jesus? 9 out of 10 of believers say yes, but only about half of doubters say, yeah, you have to believe that to be a good Mormon. And that makes sense as to what we would expect there. Okay, now what I'm going to do, and this is the last part, I'm going to flip this around just a little bit, okay? Of people who do a certain activity, how many are doubters versus believers? So this is going to be different than everything I've showed you up until this point. I'm going to say, of everyone who does X, how many of them are believers versus doubters? Okay, those who say they keep a food supply of at least 3 months, most of them are the believers. Of everyone who answered yes to that question, nearly 80% are believers and about 20% are doubters. Of people who are temple recommend holders, of the people who said, yes, I have a current temple recommend, 90% said, I believe wholeheartedly. Only 10% said they have doubts. But again, flip that around. That means that 10% of the people who are current temple recommend holders say, some things are hard for me to believe. Okay. People who say that they're full tithe payers, similar pattern, 87% to about 13%. Return missionaries, this one's the widest gap of all of them. Of those who are return missionaries, almost all of them say, yes, I believe wholeheartedly, 93%. Only 7% of return missionaries say, I have questions, or I'm not, some things are hard for me to believe. And those who attend church at least every week, so this isn't the people attending seldom or once in a while, of those who say, yes, I go every week, again, almost 9 out of 10 of them say, I believe wholeheartedly. Only about 13% say, I have questions. So now I'm looking at this, right? And I'm thinking to myself, if I am in a leadership position from the institutional perspective, right, what do I want? I want people who are temple recommend holders. I want people who are full tithe payers. I want people who are return missionaries. I want people who go to church every week. And I look at my crowd of people who are doing those things, and I see that about 90% of them are people who don't have questions, and about 10% are people who do. So that would suggest to me that, A, that 10%'s enough, right? They're there. I should pay attention to them, and I should be responsive to them. But at the same time, 90% aren't worried about these things. The vast majority of the people who are there every Sunday with their temple recommends, paying their tithing, going on missions, they're cool. They say, I believe wholeheartedly in all these things. So I would think I would be more likely to be responsive to the 90% group than the 10% group, but I still couldn't ignore the 10% group. I'd still need to be responsive to some of their concerns, but I wouldn't think that they would win on everything that they were concerned about. That, to me, helps explain a lot of the decision-making and things we see coming from the institutional church. It's largely responsive to the people who don't have questions because they make up the vast majority of the people who are doing the program, who are there every week, who are paying their tithing, and all these sorts of things. So this helps me explain some of those things that sometimes I have questions about and try to explain some things. Yes, sir?
Many of you will know Bonner Ritchie's classic study about the individual versus the institution, and he talks about the optimal, from an organizational developmental, you know, or an organizational behavior thing, to have about 1 in 7 liberals in any organization. Just enough to ask a few questions and to serve that role to be the gadfly, but for the health of a healthy organization, he says, you know, too many liberals and no one will pay to keep the lights on. So just an interesting thing when you see the 13% about the attend church every week.
Oh, it's true. It's true. Yeah. So it's not quite at that 1/7 yet, but it could. Yeah, it could be. We could be working on it. We could be getting there. Yeah, indeed. Thank you, Dan, for bringing that up there. Excellent. Okay. And because I'm a political scientist, of course, I'm interested in this too. okay. So check this out. Stereotype, right? Mormon Democrats are faithless people who don't have testimonies, or else they'd be good Republicans, right? I've heard that before in my life. Okay. Well, you can respond with this here. This is the breakdown here. Amongst Mormon Republicans in the United States, 84% of them are wholehearted believers, 16% are doubters. Amongst Democrats, yes, according to the stereotype, we do see that only about 57% are wholehearted believers, 43% are doubters. But that still means a majority of Mormon Democrats are wholehearted believers. And you can cite it. There's evidence. Okay, I just like that. I like being able to say that. It's nice to be able to challenge stereotypes, yes? Okay. All right, so... In summary... This is taking a wider view at it from above. These are the things that I took away from this. You might take away other things. This is what I thought was interesting. If I'm to try to figure out who are the doubters and who are the believers, I'm not going to be looking so much at their demographic characteristics, age, gender, race, etc. I'm going to be looking at their religious characteristics. Are they a convert or not? How often do they go to church? Things like that. Those things are more predictive than demographic characteristics of who has questions versus who has doubts. I also thought that question about life satisfaction was interesting, that both groups are about equally likely to say, I'm satisfied with how my life is going. The other thing I thought was important is that within those who say that they're Mormon, again, the vast majority of which are active, they're similar in a lot of ways. Sure, there's differences. We saw differences here. But a strong majority of even people who have questions are still believing the basic church doctrines, which is interesting, a little bit different than I expected there. And from an institutional perspective of who's an ideal Mormon, the takeaway from this for me, it's about 10% of the ideal Mormons, the ones going to church every week, doing their food supply with the temple recommend, et cetera, are the ones with doubts. It's about 10 to 90% on average. But let me reiterate, this was 5 years ago in 2011. A lot's changed in the last 5 years. I think changing exponentially as things become more and more out, if this same survey were to be repeated right now, this might look very, very different. Which brings me to shameless plug, okay? a colleague of mine, many of you are probably familiar with Jana Reese, who does the Flunking Sainthood blog. If any of you are social media friends with her or have listened to any recent podcasts on either Rational Face or Mormon Matters or I think one or two others, she is looking to update this data. She's looking at this and thinking, we need more data. The good data is a couple of years old now. There's not that many surveys out there. So I've been able to help her design a new survey, which includes many of these questions, but also a variety of others, including a better question than just a wholehearted versus some things are hard to believe, for me to believe. We have much more nuanced questions on this and everything. But as I said at the very beginning, it's not cheap to get that kind of data. And so she's running a Kickstarter campaign to try to raise some funds to pay a professional survey company to go out and collect 1,000 to 2,000 Mormons and get their answers to these surveys. That Kickstarter campaign ends tomorrow at 10 p.m. So if you'd like to participate, I'm sure she'd be very appreciative of that. Lots of people have kicked in a little bit of money. She's trying to raise, we got a quota from a company, $17,000. It's not cheap. And again, that's a pretty good bargain compared to what a lot of other surveys cost and such. But we believe it will be invaluable because we'll be able to get, as of 2016, answers for Mormons on a variety of these questions, plus she's got all kinds of other questions. She's surveying people about their experiences growing up in the church, their current political and social attitudes, things about what they do with their behavior at church right now, and all sorts of stuff. If you're interested in that, just go find her Flunking Sainthood blog. She's got a description of her project. There's a link to the Kickstarter campaign. And I do apologize for shaking you down here at the presentation. But there we go. So if that's something you're interested in, you're free to participate. If not, I'm glad you came today. Questions? Yes, sir.
Well, just I'm aware of Janice's project. But, one of the issues of getting rid of this bias towards, yes, I'm a Mormon, and a lot of people who aren't Mormons just not self-identifying, was, you probably remember the question, but mm-hmm. It's like, have you been a Mormon for at least 1 year within the last...
It's before you were 18.
Before you were 18, yeah.
And that's the key thing that her project is doing that no other public opinion data survey of Mormons has ever done before. It's going to get both people who currently identify as Mormon plus people who don't identify right now but say that at some point in their lives when they were young, they did. So then we'll be able to compare the two groups on a lot of these same questions that we were, I think it was from somewhere over here, we're asking about causality, right? Does one lead to the other? Does one? So we can see, okay, so amongst people who used to identify with the church but no longer do, what are their answers to these questions versus those who currently identify? And amongst the people who don't anymore, it's got questions about that. Like, well, you know, what happened to you? Was it because of this? Was it because of this, or because of this? So that's going to be, like I said, an invaluable project there that I'm very excited about.
And she's close. Less than 2,000 left.
Mm-hmm.
To race.
That's right. Yeah. So we're right there. Everyone in here, $5. We'll get it taken care of. Yeah.
$60 gets you a copy of the book that she's going to write. Mm-hmm. She's also doing qualitative interviews for the book to go along with the data. And so $100 will get you an executive summary of the findings by this December.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty cool.
If she gets 30,000, can she do twice as big a survey?
Yes.
She'd be happy to have her. I mean, this is bargain basement. This is...
Yeah.
She's not going to make money on this no matter what.
Yeah, no, that's a really good deal we were able to get with our... with our contracting company there. Okay, so it's 3:15. We technically have until 3:30. If you all are good, we can be done. Or if we want to have Q&A for 15 minutes, we can do that too. Okay. Thanks, Dan. There we go. Yeah, exactly.
I didn't mean to make that end, and I just wanted to thank you before the Q&A. You know, so.
No, we appreciate it. If you need to take off or if you want to stick around, that's cool, too. Whatever you want to do. Okay, yeah. No. Well, okay. So as far as the data that I have access to that they allow you to download, no. There's zero identifying contact information. They have to do that for legal purposes. It has to be completely anonymous. So I can see the 1,000 people and what they answered, but I can't see where they live, what their names are, what their addresses are, what their phone numbers are. Pew has that data, but they keep it strictly confidential. But they can still use those to do another survey later. Mm-hmm. They could, yes. They could, yeah. There could be. They could do that. That would be an interesting project. Yeah. Okay, well, I'm happy if anyone has questions, come talk to me up here, but I'll be done with this. So thank you for our audio audience for listening, and thanks everyone for coming today. Okay, have a good one.